Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
This is Dr. Mike Roizen. You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. Welcome back. This is podcast 847B, the guest segment. And we have a wonderful guest for you, Dr. James D. Nicol Antonio. And that, he taught me how to pronounce it. He's a PharmD who wrote the book, The Salt Fix, cardiovascular research scientist and doctor at St. Luke's Medical Center, the Mid-America Heart Institute in Kansas City. And he's going to talk about, I hope, how we got to the requirements of salt, whether we're eating too much, too little, and where we stand. And Dr. D. Nicolatanio, I'm horribly murdering your name. I apologize. So I'm just going to call this Dr. The Salt Fix. Dr. Salt Fix?
Yep. Hey, Michael. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Doing well.
Good. Tell me how we got to, one, where we are with our perceptions of salt, and two, whether we're eating too much or too little, and why you think so, and then let's go through it.
Great. That's a perfect question. That was the first question I wanted to answer when I was writing the book. And so really all our nutritional guidance starts from the 1977 dietary goal. Now, Americans were told to eat a high-carb, low-fat diet, and they were also told to cut their salt intake. Unfortunately, back in 1977, there was no evidence that cutting salt intake would actually reduce strokes and heart attacks. It was based on a big assumption. And so that assumption has just carried over to the 1980 dietary guidelines.
So what is the assumption? The assumption came from the Intersalt study?
Intersalt came in much later, but the assumption came from relying on a few opinions at the time. And really, they misrepresented those opinions. So there was two men that these dietary goals mainly relied upon. Their names are George Menneely and Harold Botterby. They were the experts at the time on salt, and they wrote a thesis paper the year before that these dietary goals came out. And they said that if you eat a low amount of potassium, and only in those genetically susceptible, should you cut your salt intake. Unfortunately, we know that every American was told to cut their salt intake. So it's based on a misrepresented interpretation of a few scientists' opinions back in the time.
What I understood from way back when, in the 40s, when we didn't have any medications for high blood pressure, that, and I want you to correct this, Dr. D. Nicolatanio, who wrote The Salt Fix. By the way, it's a fascinating book because he goes through the history of salt, but we'll go through that in a few minutes. But correct this, that when people had high blood pressure, they would go on what was called a plain rice diet, or the rice diet came into account, and it was thought to lower blood pressure by the absence of salt. Did it work, or was that all fake?
It's a great question. So in the book, I do go over where that idea came from. So the rice diet was actually invented by Walter Kempner. And he was promoting the diet and saying that it was working in about two-thirds of his very hypertensive patients. I'm talking about, they had a systolic blood pressure, which is your top number, of about 200 millimeters of mercury. And the bottom number was about 100 to 120. So very, very hypertensive patients. Obviously, this wouldn't apply to people with normal blood pressure. But he was showing that his rice diet was reducing blood pressure in about two-thirds of people. Unfortunately, when it was tested in actual clinical studies, it was much less effective. It only worked in about 20% of people. And they showed that the low salt part of his diet actually made things worse. It worsened kidney function. It increased heart rate. It even led to some people dying from salt depletion.
So, now, then, how was this perpetuated such that we got on this idea? And I guess the Intersalt study was when in the 70s? I can't remember. You have it on in in the book.
Yeah, I think it was 1998, if I recall correctly.
Oh, it was all the way in the 90s.
Yep.
So tell us what happened. So after this work on the rice diet and the trials of it showed only 20% of it seemed to lower blood pressure, but yet that myth got perpetuated.
Correct. So the dietary goals kind of misrepresented the data, and unfortunately the dietary goals turned into the dietary guidelines in 1980, and those have been updated every 5 years. So that low-salt myth has just been propagated and carried over with every update to the dietary guidelines.
Now, the dietary guidelines come from a group of scientists that are assembled by the USDA and the FDA in combination, I think. And what you're saying is they just accepted what was written down without going back through the literature?
Correct. That's exactly 100% correct.
And now, what has caused us to... So let me go through, since the InterSALT study was a major study, and I'm mentioning that three or four times, because that where we were when I went to medical school was in the early days of the 70s, where we were just getting those drugs that we thought depleted salt, hydrochlorothiazide. It was effective for lowering blood pressure. We had had the sympathetic drugs before that, reserpine and some others. Mayo inhibitors were earlier than that. That had some dangerous side effects, so reserpine, and we knocked out the sympathetic nervous system, and we found that we were in the early 70s, it was the diuretics and beta blockers were used to treat high blood pressure, and in that era, it was thought that it was sodium depletion of arterial wall and arterioles over the long period, 3 weeks, was what was lowering blood pressure from those drugs. Is that wrong?
Well, so that's a great question. So I'm probably one of the leading experts on diuretics. I've published a lot of papers. I've published over 200 papers in the medical literature. So hydrochlorothiazide is the most common diuretic prescribed in America. Now, that medication actually increased cardiovascular death in the Oslo mild hypertension trial, even though it lowered blood pressure very significantly. And part of it is because it lowers potassium, but it also can deplete sodium. The diuretics that have been shown to reduce cardiovascular events, like chlorthalidone and indapamide, actually inhibit carbonic anhydrase. And that has a more vasodilating type of effect, and it increases nitric oxide and has all these cardioprotective effects. So we're starting to find out that it's not just blood pressure that needs to be lowered. There needs to be some type of cardiovascular protection. And so actually the salt depletion may actually be a side effect. And that's why so many people have low sodium levels in their blood. And one of the main reasons why I recommend not consciously restricting your salt intake is because I had two family members that were told to do that. And they both wound up in the hospital with low sodium levels in the blood and severe dehydration. And so the point is, your body, when it's craving salt, you shouldn't fight that urge. That is an urge telling you that you need more salt.
Now, let's take us through the, because it still is a very, hydrochlorothiazide is still a very common antihypertensive, and clearly in the Veterans Administration antihypertensive or blood pressure trials, lowering blood pressure saves lives, decreases strokes radically. And in those trials, they used hydrochlorothiazide extensively. So let's go to at least bring us up to date on where we are on salt in general. And how did we, and if you would talk a little bit about the studies of InterSALT, and because that was one of those that led to perpetuation of the concept of lowering sodium helps lower blood pressure. We should say, and Dr. Dean Nicolatanio gives due credit in the SaltFix too, there is a group of people who have sodium-sensitive hypertension, but it's probably 1/3 of 1%, so it's not very many people. But excluding those, bring us up to date.
Yeah, so the INTERSALT study was, again, somewhat misrepresented. So what ended up actually happening is they published data on 52 populations. And what they saw was a slight trend that as salt intake increased, blood pressure slightly went up. The problem is, though, is when you removed the four primitive cultures who eat zero sugar, exercise all the time, extremely thin, and you look at a relevant 48-patient population that's reflective of normal people living in, you know, countries that we know today, not people in tribal areas. As salt intake actually increased, blood pressure actually went down. The one population that actually was consuming close to the recommendation, about one teaspoon of salt, actually had much higher blood pressure than several populations consuming twice the amount of salt. So INTERSALT actually never really showed that populations that would consume lower amounts of salt would have lower blood pressure. It actually showed the opposite.
If you exclude the four primitive populations.
Correct.
So now what has happened, and bring us up to date, if you will, with both heart failure and antihypertensives. You do this well in the book. So the book is The Salt Fix, and a very, very interesting book. And then I want to get into potassium versus sodium before we end, since that is a, I've gotten emails on that already. So talk to me about how we got where we are in both hypertension and in heart failure.
Sure. So most people with hypertension actually have insulin resistance. So they have higher insulin levels, which causes them to over-retain salt. And a diet high in sugar can actually lead to this. Now, so basically, how I try to view hypertension is, if you're over-consuming refined carbs and sugar, if you cut those out, that can lower your insulin and you won't over-retain salt. So it's almost like don't blame the salt for what the refined carbs and sugar did. So that is how I address a lot of people with hypertension. And some people with hypertension do have underlying factors like high aldosterone levels, high cortisol, causing them to over-retain salt. But we have medications that can block that. So people can use salt and taste their healthy food again and eat more healthy foods high in potassium. So really the book is about use salt to eat those bitter foods that you never would have consumed before, like bitter greens, nuts, seeds. And salt allows us to eat those healthy foods and get our potassium and get our magnesium. So we shouldn't fear salt.
Now, what about high blood pressure? We use medications that serve to decrease sodium, and we replace it with potassium or potassium chloride, if you will. Talk to us about where we are on that.
Yeah, so it's a great, great question. We use diuretics for certain hypertensives. People that have, basically, there's some people who have high levels of renin, which you don't want to use a diuretic because you're just going to increase renin and make the hypertension worse. So a lot of people don't realize that you can give a diuretic to a hypertensive. You can increase their blood pressure by doing that. It just depends on what type of hypertension they have. If someone has a low renin hypertension, diuretics can seem to work in those particular patient populations. But again, most of the evidence shows that these diuretics that actually reduce cardiovascular events are those that inhibit carbonic anhydrase very well.
But let's go. So it lowers blood pressure, and no doubt lowering blood pressure at least decreases strokes and heart attacks pretty convincingly. Let's go and talk about why, where we are. In other words, how many people recognize what you're saying for the hypertensives, and how did we get such that we recommend low sodium currently? Obviously, a lot of people know Well, let's go and do the heart failure first, and then go and talk about the general population, because I think the heart failure story is interesting.
Yeah, so 25% of people with heart failure actually have hyponatremia, which is low sodium levels in the blood. And that's because when you have a reduction in cardiac output, you get a reduction in basically blood flow to the kidneys, and that causes an over-retention of water. So basically the body is thinking, the heart's not working well, blood isn't perfusing the kidneys well. So the body actually views heart failure as a low blood volume state. So the body tries to increase blood volume. Unfortunately, it over-retains water compared to salt. And so 25% of people with heart failure have low sodium levels in their blood. And so that's why there's never been a study in heart failure patients that has ever shown that cutting salt reduces mortality. And it may actually be harmful because low sodium levels in the blood are so prevalent in heart failure patients.
And so that's now been shown in a couple of studies, but part of the reason this developed was, in fact, if you manage heart failure patients and they take a few extra potato chips, sodium loaded, they get worse heart failure because they are on a borderline area and they literally flood their lungs with fluid. So it was thought, if I can add to the story clinically, that reducing sodium would make them better and live longer. And what's been shown is that's not true. They are relatively salt depleted, as you have said, and thus depleting them further may make things worse rather than better. But we should say, to, before any heart failure patients listening in grab the bag of potato chips and say, salt's good for me, make sure you don't overdo it at once, because you're in a very narrow range of acceptable sodium. Do I have that? That's from a clinical standpoint, Dr. Nicolo. Why am I getting this? Dr. D. Nicolo Antonio, right?
Yeah, I think that was very well said.
Now, take us back to the general population. It seems to me that Mayor Bloomberg and his health director in New York, Thomas Friedman, got this after they were successful with decreasing sugar and labeling and the soda tax and the soda size in New York. They seem to me mistakenly go after sodium.
Yeah, I would agree with that 100%.
But I'm saying, is that the? I mean, where have we come in the current admonitions against sodium? Why haven't we reversed it?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. So, New York City is like demonizing salt to the nth degree, right? So restaurants are now required in New York City to have basically this like black ominous triangle around a salt shaker if it contains a high amount of salt, as if salt is some type of toxic poison, even though it's the most natural food preservative and we've been using it for 10,000 years to preserve our food. And all of a sudden we're throwing labels on it to make it seem like it's a toxin. And the reason is that nobody understands how prevalent salt depletion really is, which it is the most common electrolyte abnormality in both people living in their homes and people in the hospital. We don't understand, most people do not understand the benefits of salt. It is a essential micronutrient that we need, that if we don't get enough of, there are significant consequences to. So it's now, just starting to get out there with my book, The Benefits of Salt.
Now, what about getting potassium chloride? That's a potassium salt rather than a sodium salt. Does that make a difference?
Yeah, I think that in general is a bad idea because a lot of people have kidney disease. A lot of people have issues with high potassium levels. And as I said, low sodium and salt depletion is very common. So we're so afraid of sodium because we don't understand the benefits that we're willing to say, well, let's use this low or no salt that's got potassium chloride. And so we're now consuming a substance that really doesn't exist in nature, potassium chloride, whereas salt is very prevalent in nature, sodium chloride. So we're almost we're making the wrong change in that aspect. We want to use salt to eat foods high in both potassium and magnesium and all of the minerals, and not just really isolate potassium in potassium chloride.
So if you were going to look at a diet now, what would be the ideal group of foods that you would choose to get the right amount of sodium?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So there are foods like clams. 7 ounces of clams can give someone about a teaspoon of salt. So that's a healthy food. We know seafood is very healthy. It's high in omega-3s, but it's also high in salt. So that is a food that is generally most Americans are not consuming enough seafood. So crab, a lobster, olives, pickles, anchovies, all those foods are high in salt. And
so
a lot of them are
those, with the exception of olives, but the others come from a saltwater environment.
Yes, correct.
I don't think olives do, but I don't know that. I think they just are a regular environment. But tell me what other foods. So we've got fish. We've got seaweed, has a lot of salt in it. Things from the sea. What other kinds of foods do?
Sure. So unfortunately, we no longer consume the entire animal. So we used to consume the salty blood, the salty interstitial fluid, all the salty organs. Nowadays, we're kind of just left consuming muscle meat. So that's what people need to get in their heads. We need to add the salt back because we no longer are consuming the entire salty animal.
And now, is your recommendation, if you do this at the Mid-America Heart Institute, we're talking to Dr. James D. Nicolantonio, Nicolantonio, and you can see why I'm horribly pronouncing that name, and I apologize. But now, do you tell your physicians, you advise the physicians you work with, not to use diuretics?
No, I definitely think that diuretics have a place. You just got to monitor sodium levels very carefully. And we know that, you know, about 20% of people who are placed on a diuretic could end up with low sodium levels in the blood. So you got to balance it very carefully.
Most of us use potassium chloride as a way of balancing it, and that helps retain sodium. Are we doing the wrong thing?
Well, I would say that it depends on the person. So some people over-retain salt, and I think trying to find the underlying cause is much better than just kind of throwing a drug at it. So if someone is potentially has high blood pressure due to high amounts of salt, there are several key underlying causes, one being a Cushing's-type syndrome where they have elevated cortisol, another being primary aldosteronism, or, you know, there's other causes of
Yeah, but all those are pretty darn rare.
Well, I mean, high levels of aldosterone is a very common cause of resistant hypertension. Some people have sleep apnea as a cause of hypertension. So I think trying to get at the underlying cause. And a lot of people actually have elevations in blood pressure, we know, because they're overweight. So your best way to actually lose blood pressure is to exercise, right? And you lose salt through sweat. So a lot of people need to up their salt intake when they're trying to exercise more, and that'll help them lose the weight. A lot of studies have shown if people lose the weight without cutting salt, they lose the high blood pressure.
That's a good thing to lose high blood pressure. We're talking to, and we've been talking with, the author of The Salt Fix, why the experts got it all wrong and how eating more might save your life. I urge you to, if you're interested in this topic, if you've got high blood pressure, if you're worried about salt intake, if you consume and are interested in plants versus other foods as a balancing of salt, this is a book that you should read and make your own decisions with. I have read it now and I'm still not making a solid decision one way or another, other than we know that restricting salt probably only matters for those with salt-sensitive hypertension. But whether we should eat more or not, I'm not clear on. We already eat a fair bit in our diet. We've been talking with Dr. James Nicolantonio, and darn, I wish I could do that better, the author, The Salt Fix. And you've been listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast, iHeart, Radio MD, and others. New show every Tuesday. This is a new Tuesday. This is Tuesday. I think we're on the 4th of July today. So celebrate and maybe put some extra salt on your salmon burger. Thanks very much for listening. We'll be back next week with a new set of podcasts, a new news of the week, and a great guest coming up. The guest for next week is going to talk about the role of medical marijuana and what we know about it. Stephen Korn and his wife, Meredith Fisher Korn, experts from the Harvard Medical School, and teach courses and have online courses for physicians on medical marijuana, so they are real experts in this field. We'll get your questions. You can always email us questions in advance at udocs, Y-O-U-D-O-C-S, at gmail.com. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with a new You, the Owner's Manual podcast, so you can keep taking control of your health and live at the top of your curve for very long. Sonar, thanks for great engineering, and you for listening.